Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Pei Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 11 lines from the top of Daf Pei Ches. You'll notice a Mishnah. Hamadir Hano Mechasonoi, a father-in-law that vows that his son-in-law is not to benefit from him. And the father-in-law wants to give his daughter some money. Omer law, the father of the woman, the father-in-law in this case, says to his daughter, Hare hamois ho'elu nisunim loch b'matona, ובלבד שלא יהיה לבעלך רשוס בוהן, אלא מה שאת נויסס ונויסנס בפיך. The father says that these monies are given to you as a gift on the condition that, or provided that, your husband has no control or rights to these monies, and what you are receiving is only that which you actually consume, that which you eat. If we glance in the Ran, you'll notice on the fourth wide line of the widest lines, there's a star, and we've written the following, where we're going to read the Ran together. Tzorach Shiyoy Malo, the father of the girl, of the woman, has to say to her, Hare Mosa Ilu Nisunach Matano, Vat Shelo Yehe Lebalech Rushus Bahen, Elamashat Nisenes Lepich. Vidavke Bomerlo Hani Tre Lishni. The father is able to give his daughter money only if he uses these two expressions. Aval Omar, if the father said, father of the woman said, Ein Lebalech Rushus Bahen, I'm giving you these monies on the condition that your husband has no rights to them. Lo mahani, it's ineffective. The masnisin Rabbi Meir hi damar yad isha kiad baylo kidemugi lo b'gemora. The Mishnah is based on the opinion of Rabbi Meir that holds that a woman's rights are essentially an extension of the husband's rights. In other words, whatever a woman has rights to, her husband has rights to, as the Gemara will establish. And therefore, by simply saying, I'm giving you these monies with the condition that your husband has no rights to it, it's insufficient. So if you're going to say that the condition of Ein Lebalech Rishusbem is ineffective, so by adding another clause, how does that make the gift effective? Hainu Taimo Mishum Dekevon She'en Isha Zeche B'Nechosim Klal At Shetitein Oysom L'Soch Pia. Since the daughter is not going to access this gift other than that which she actually consumes, Hare ba'oisa shoyin abal yochel liskois pen, as she receives from her father money, let us say, to buy food. When does the daughter actually gain possession of it? As she takes the food that she bought with her father's money and puts it in her mouth. Well, at that point, obviously, the husband has no control or no rights to it. But up till that point, it really was the father's. And hence, the son-in-law wasn't accessing the funds, and hence there was no violation of the vow. Now we turn to the Gemara. Omar Rav. You notice we have a house marking around Rav. And by the way, if you don't have a marked Gemara, you should know that you can access marked Gemaras by contacting gmarkings@gmail.com. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei, a topic heading, which is combined with a structural note, the Nosei Mivneh, and the house form that we see in our Gemara represents Deos, that we're reading on the side of the Gemara, Deos al hechamadir hanome chasonoi yocholoseis mois lebita blilavur al nidro. How can a father-in-law who forswore granting benefit to his son-in-law give his own daughter money without violating the vow? In other words, the daughter is going to receive a gift from her father, and at that same time, it's not going to represent a violation of the vow where the son-in-law cannot benefit from him. So, Omar Rav, lo shono elo de Omar lo, ma sha'at noisis v'neisenes b'fich. The gift to the daughter will be acceptable only if the father adds this clause, as we saw in the Mishnah. Avol Omar, ma shetirtzi asi, if all the father says is, I'm giving you these monies on condition that your husband has no rights to it, and do with it as you please, kono yason baal, the husband will have access, will have rights to it, and that will be then a violation of the vow, based on the idea that yad isha ki yad baila, whatever the woman accesses, the husband accesses, and it would be as if the father-in-law gave the money to the son-in-law in violation of the vow. We take a look in the Rashi, five lines from the end. Avalomar lo mashetirtzi asi bohen. Afogav the Omar law, even though the father-in-law had said, or the father of the woman had said, shein lebalech rishus bohen, on condition that your husband has no rights to it, domi kemi shekona habal miyad ho'av, it nevertheless is like the son-in-law received it from the father-in-law. Diad isho kiad baylo, literally, the arm of the woman is like the arm of her husband. Ukamisha nosanach sonodomi, and it's as if the father-in-law did give it to a son-in-law. Sharei hirshalo bohen lasis ben kol davar v'yosra ba'al bohen. And this, if this was the language that was used, kol mash tirtzi asi, whatever you want to do, well, whatever you want to do, that then will include, we'll say, the husband in having access to those funds. We continue. Ushmuel Omer, afilu Omar mash tirtzi asi, even if the father says to his daughter, I'm giving you these monies on condition your husband has no rights to it, and do with it as you please, lo koni yason baal, the husband does not have access to it. And Rashi explains that Shmuel is of the opinion that we don't say yad isha ki yad baila. Maskif lo Rabbi Zera. We continue with the Gemara at the top of Omid Beis. Rabbi Zera asks, Keman azlo hoshmaitza de Rav, based on whom is Rav's teaching that explains the Mishnah and its, we'll say, extensive terminology in the clause, the conditions that under which the vow will not be violated? This Mishnah is in accordance with Rebbe Meir, that without the added clause, we would run into the problem of Yad Isha Ki Yad Baila. So, like whom is Rav explaining the Mishnah? Ke Rebbe Meir. Diomar Yad Isha Ki Yad Baila. That in general, the woman is associated with her husband. that whatever the woman has rights to, her husband has rights to. Well, that having been said, v'raminu, we raise a contradictory Mishnah source. You see, in our Mishnah there was no name. Essentially, our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, which we'll assume is in accordance, as the Gemara said itself, is in accordance with Rebbe Meir. And now we have another Stam Mishnah. A Stam Mishnah is a Mishnah that has no name in it. So the Gemara now raises a contradiction from an unnamed Mishnah, which is assumed to be Rebbe Meir, as a rule throughout the Talmud that a Stam Mishnah is, unless otherwise explained, is assumed to be in accordance with Rebbe Meir. And hence, we'll see now another Rebbe Meir source that would seem to contradict what we have said till now. Up till now we have said that according to Rebbe Meir, Yarisho Kiyad Baila V'Rominu. The source that we're about to read deals with halachas of Eruvin and Eruv Chatzeros. Without getting into too much detail, after all there's an entire Masechta dedicated to that topic, we have an Eruv Chatzeros and another form of joining up different domains with one another called a Shitav Muvos. A Shitav Muvos essentially is an alleyway into which a number of different courtyards open, and the question that the halacha deals with, the issue concerns the ability on Shabbos to carry from the alleyway into the individual courtyards and vice versa. This will be allowed if all of the owners of the courtyards join together. It's called a shituf muvos. Ketzad mishtatfim b'movli. How is this accomplished? How do a number of people demonstrate that they are all partners, so to speak, in the alley? Menichas achavis. So one of the owners sets aside a barrel, say a barrel of wine, V'yomer harei zeh l'chol b'nei movui. I am donating or dedicating this to all the members of the alleyway, meaning all the owners that are in the courtyards opening into the alleyway. U'mezak elohen al yedei avdo v'shivchos ivrim. Here is the critical point. Mezake is an action whereby you take an item and you present it to a second party on behalf of everyone else. Sometimes it could be on the behalf of an individual. But here we're dealing with enabling all of the members of this area to become partners, part owners in this barrel of wine. So the speaker here, the original owner of the barrel, presents it to his servant, his bondmaid. Ho'ivrim is a reference to Jewish servants. Ve'al yedei beno vito hagdolim, or to his own children that are adults. In other words, they're we'll say, independent entities. V'al yedei ishto. He can also present it to his own wife, and she receives the barrel on behalf of all the other members of the movui, of the alleyway. V'i amris kona yatzon baila. If you're going to say that whatever a woman acquires, in effect her husband acquires, well then, Eruv lo nafik mirushu say the Baal. Then this Eruv is the barrel of wine. Eruv literally means an entity that joins others together. Well then, it never left the original owner's domain. And the whole point of Zechiyah, of enabling the Shituf Muvois to be effective, I would have to take the item I want the others to benefit from, to become owners in, and have it leave my domain. But if by giving it, if you're going to say, as we've said till now, that Yad Isha Kiyad Baila, how does the Zechia work when the man gives it to his own wife? It's like taking something from your right pocket and putting it into your left pocket. We don't see any demonstration of it, of the barrel leaving his domain on behalf of others. Omar Rava. So we have, as we look on in the Gemara, you see markings. We have two diamonds, and on the side of them under the Mivneh heading, Hasberim Besoch Shitas Rabbi Meir Bin Yitzchir Shita Mvos Hayadei Ishto. We have to explain Rabbi Meir, because right now we have a seeming contradiction. In our Mishnah, it seems that Yad Isha Kiyad Baila. The issue concerning the Shita Mvos would present the woman as a separate entity, not an extension of her husband. So Rava says, Afagav di Omar Rabbi Meir Yad Isha Kiyad Baila, even though in general that which a married woman possesses or gains access to, her husband likewise gains access. Moide Rabbi Meir, Leinyan Shituf, Rabbi Meir will concede regarding this specific topic of Shituf Muvos, of joining together the members of this area, the kevon the lizchus or the lizakis lachirim hu, since the whole point, the whole intention here is for the others, the other members, to gain access to the barrel, miad baila zachya. She is also considered eligible for receiving it from the husband on behalf of the others. Let's glance at Rashi, the upper part of the narrow lines. Moide Rabbi Meir linyan shituf de kevon de lezakis lachirim hu miad baila zachya. Klomar, kevon de baal, since the husband daito havi lezakis lachirim, his whole intention is for the others to gain possession of the wine. Al yedei ishto nami yotzu miad baila. Through his wife, it's also effective. V'ein lo rishus bohen klum. V'ahochi mezaki lehu al yoda. And by his giving it to her, it leaves his exclusive possession, and it is effective. Avu ba'alma, but in general, kevan kegon diyoev maton alishto, when people give a gift to one's wife, I will tell you, the Arisha Kiyad Bail, giving it to the wife is like giving it to the husband. So Rava's point is very simple, and that is that the case of Shituf Mvos, since there's a concerted effort on the husband to have the other members of the Mavui gaining possession of the Chovis, so the woman, the wife, can act as the intermediary or the catalyst for this to be effective. Eisvei Ravina le Ravashi. So Ravina asks, we have another Eruvin source, another source dealing with the joining together of domains, and it says here, Eilu shezochen lahem. Zochen is the concept of zechia. These are the ones through whom one can transfer ownership from himself to all the others. And who are the people who can function? Al yedei beno vito hagedolim, through his adult daughters and sons, v'yavdu shivchos u'ivrim, his Jewish servants. But now we get interested. V'elu she'ein zochin lahem. The following are ineligible for Zechia. And who do they include? Ayadei beno vito haktanim, his sons and daughters that are minors, they're under his own domain. So giving it to them doesn't transfer it out of his domain on behalf of others. V'avda v'shivchos haktanim, and Canaanite servants and bondmaids, they are considered his possession, and hence giving it to them is not transferring out of his domain. And the main point, the ishto, giving it to his wife is ineffective. So here we have a source that says to the contrary, unlike the Stam Mishnah quoted above. Elo Omar Ravashi, Masnisin, the Tanaic source above that said giving it to one's wife is effective, is a very limited case. Rather, in general, giving it to your wife would be ineffective. It's like, as we said before, Yad Isha Ki Yad Bailo, like taking something from your right pocket and putting in your left pocket. It doesn't work, giving something to your wife in the hopes of that being a zechia on behalf of others. So the source above, however, said that giving it to one's wife is an effective zechia. So Ravashi says that Tanaic source was b'sheyesh lo chotzer boisim ovu yaskinon. It's a very specific case. It's a woman, a married woman, that happens to have a piece of property. She has a courtyard that opens into that mavui that is exclusively her own. You might ask, well, how can something become exclusively her own? So the Ran explains that. We'll look at that momentarily. But let's just finish the next line of Gemara. And we explain, demigu dezachil anafsha, since she, in that case, needs the mavui for her own purposes. If she wants to carry from her personal courtyard into that alleyway on Shabbos, she needs the benefit of a sheet of mavos. So since she needs it for herself, zachio lachrini, she is able to receive the chavis, the barrel of wine, on behalf of others as well. The Ran that we look at together, Elom Ravashi, we're looking at the Ran on the fifth of the widest lines. He says, Ki kotoni mezakilenei deishto, the upper Tanaic source that says that zechiyah through one's wife is effective, davkim sheish lechotzbo simovwi. It's only in a case where she has her own chotzer. She's like an outsider with regard to an outsider, meaning she's like any of the other neighbors in this mavui. Kagon shenofla b'yerusha b'yerarusa. Imagine the case of a woman who inherited a piece of property, a courtyard, before she consummated her marriage with this man, with her husband, while she was an arusa. V'hu kosav lo b'yerarusa. And the husband, before they consummated their marriage, declared the following: Din udvarim ein li b'nechosayach. I have nothing to do with your properties. B'chiyai gavno mehani. In this fashion, the husband, in fact, removes himself from gaining access to this piece of property. So, vis-a-vis this particular chutzner that she owns, she's like just any one of the other neighbors who needs the benefit of the sheet of muvos to enable transfer of items from that chutzner to the mavui. So since she needs it for her own benefit, she can also receive it on behalf of the others. But if you weren't dealing with that kind of case, we see Yad Isha Ki Yad Baila, and the Zechiyah, the transfer of the item through her to the others, would not be effective because she doesn't represent a transfer of the item out of the original fellow's possession. Now we encounter a new Mishnah. On the side we have a Nosei Mivneh heading. Roman numerals 1 and 2 appear. Neder almona ugrusha, mosai chola, the vows of a widow or of a divorcee, when do they take effect? When are they not subject to annulment? V'ein bailo ha'asidiyo chola hafer, and her future husband is not able to annul. U'mosayo chola hafer, and likewise, under what circumstances will there be an ability on the husband's part to annul? We use some markings to highlight the key words. The word ketzad is highlighted with a house marking, meaning the Mishnah will give us practical examples, and they're introduced with the word ketzad. And the double underline will be used to highlight the possibilities of either Eino Yochol or Yochol Lahofer. Either he cannot or he can mefer. The Mishnah. The Neder Almona Grusha Yokum Aleha. The Pasuk in the Parsha, in the section of the Torah that deals with vows, with women's vows, mentions that the vows of an Almona, and an Almona is a widow, Grusha a divorcee, are established. In other words, they are binding vows. Up till now, we've learned many, many dapim where we see fathers of girls, husbands of wives, having the ability to annul vows. An almona, she's a widow. She's not married. She's not in her father's domain. A grusha divorcee, obviously, she is on her own. So her vows are binding. But that's just the beginning. Ketzad. Under what circumstances does this pasuk apply? Omra, imagine a widow says, Hareini nazira li'achar shloishim yom. I accept upon myself nazirus. Nazirus is an example of a vow. The abstinence from wine and vine products and defilement to the dead, we call that nazirus. She accepts upon herself that type of vow, and she says, I want to become that 30 days from now. Afalpi sheniseis besoich shloshim yom, even though she, this widow, marries within 30 days, eino yochol lahafer. Our Mishnah takes the position that the husband will not be able to annul that vow. Why not? Because, according to the opinion of the Mishnah, annulment, or lack thereof, is based on time of speech, time of the making of the vow, not the time of its taking effect. Emphasis, then, is on the time of speech. At that point in time, she was still an almona. She wasn't married. And for the husband to annul such a vow, he comes in only later on. The vow preceded him. That's called koidmin. Koidmin means before. The vow was before him. And we know that eina baal mefer b'koidmin, husbands cannot annul vows that preceded his presence. We continue at the top of Pei Tes Amud Aleph. Nodra v'hi b'rishus habaal mefer la. A woman vows while she is in the domain of her husband. The husband can annul it. Well, obviously we're not talking about a simple, straightforward case. Otherwise, you don't need the Mishnah to describe it. So what is this? And all of this is in light of the pasuk of Neder Almona Grusha Yokum Aleha. What is the case over here? Ketzad. Omra, a married woman, says, Hareini Nazira Liachar Shloishim. I accept upon myself Nazirus 30 days from now. And when she spoke, the husband annulled that. Afalpi Shinis Almona Oynizgar Shabasov Shloishim. Even though before the 30-day mark comes, she becomes a widow or is divorced, the vow is annulled. Once again, why is the vow annulled? Because we look at the time of the vowing, the time of the speech. At that point in time, she was still married, and there was a husband that annulled it. So far, you can see then the Mishnah has a consistent point of view that we evaluate the situation based on the time of the initial vow, not the time at which it sets in, it would become binding. Another situation, Nodra Boi Bayoim V'nizgar shebo bayom v'chziru bo bayom. A woman vowed, and on the day that she vowed, the husband divorced her. He didn't annul it. And then he took her back on that same day. Eino yochol lahafer. The husband who took her back cannot annul the vow. Even though it's what we call biyoyim shama, what's on the day of, it's on the same day that he heard the vow, at this point after he divorced her without having annulled it beforehand, he cannot now annul it. Zeh haklal, kol sheyotze lirshus atzmo sho, achas eino yochol lahafer. The following is a principle that any situation where the woman goes on her own for even a short amount of time, even for an hour, the husband can no longer annul it. We'll see later on that the expression zeh haklal is coming to include cases beyond that which are stated here in the Mishnah text itself. The Gemara continues with a brisa, and in this Tanaic source, we're going to see that the approach we've taken till now is in effect a machlokas tanoim. On the side of the Gemara, under the nosam, under the topic heading, we've written machlokas tanoim iaz linon boser shasa mira oishas chalois haneder kedei ligboya in nitan lahafora. A Tanaic controversy arises whether we establish hafora abilities based on the initial statement of the vow or the time at which the vow would set in. The Gemara. Tanya, almono grusha sha'omra, a widow or a divorcee that says, Hareini nazira lechesheeno say, I accept upon myself nazirus when I get married. Phenises, and then she gets married. So when she speaks, she is on her own. The vow would set in when she's married. Rabbi Shmuel Oimer Yofer, Rabbi Akiva Omer Lo Yofer. Rabbi Shmuel is not like what we have learned till now, at least at this point. He doesn't appear to be like what we've learned till now, because Rabbi Shmuel says in this case, Yofer. Why? Well, Rabbi Shmuel does not emphasize the time of initial speech. He emphasizes the time at which the vow sets in. And when does the vow set in? Only after she's married. Oh, after she's married, that is a point at which the husband can annul. Rabbi Kiva, on the other hand, said, Lo yofer. Why not? Because when does the... at what point do we determine hafora possibilities? At the time of initial speech. At the time of initial speech, the husband was not yet in the picture. She was on her own. V'simona yololi. The simon is a type of mnemonic device in order to keep straight, we'll say, the two sections of the Mishnah. In each section, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva argue, and you can see that we've circled letters in the Gemara, the Yud and the Lamed. So the first section is the Yud Lamed, and as we go on with the next section, you'll see the opposite, where Rabbi Shmuel says Lo Yofer and Rabbi Kiva says Yofer. What's section 2? Eishes Ish Shomra, a married woman, says Hareini Nazira Lichshes Garesh Finis Garsha. She declares herself to become a Nazira upon her divorce, and then she gets divorced. Now, at the time of speech, she is married. What determines Hafora, according to Rabbi Shmuel? Not the time of speech, but the time at which the vow would set in. In this case, when does the vow set in? After she's divorced. And hence Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Loi Yofer. Rabbi Akiva, who based Hafora not on the time the vow sets in, but rather at the time of speech, Rabbi Akiva says, yofer. Because at the time of the initial vow, of the speech, the vow statement, she was an eshesi, she was married. So it is subject to husband's annulment. Omar Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel, who, once again, says annulment is based on her status at the time the vow sets in. He says, Harehu Omer, V'neder almona u'grusha. The continuation of the pasuk reads, we've written between the lines, Kol asher osra nafsha yokum oleha. And he explains, Ad shiehe neder bishas almonus u'girushin. The pasuk that says that the vows of an almona grusha are binding, they are binding and hence and not subject to annulment. What he says is ad shiehe neder. The neder means the kium of the neder, the fulfillment, the establishment of the neder. While or when she is an almona and a grusha. So the pasuk that says the vows of an almona grusha are not subject to annulment, that's when the fulfillment of the vow or the realization of the vow is when she's an almona grusha, not the time that the vow was uttered. Rabbi Kiva Savar, Harehu Omer. Rabbi Kiva says there's another pasuk though that says Kol Asher Osra Nafsha, and he explains Ad Shiehe Isuri Neder B'Shas Almonas V'Girushin. What kind of widow or divorcee vow is binding? That kind of vow that was stated, that was uttered while an almona or a grusha, but a vow that was uttered while she was still married, that is not what the pasuk is referring to. That kind of vow is subject to annulment. Omar Rav Chisda, Masnisin Rabbi Akiva hi. Rav Chisda says that which might appear to be the obvious. Our Mishnah that based annulment on her status at the time of initial vowing, our Mishnah conforms to Rabbi Akiva's approach. Abaye Omar Afilu Temo Rabbi Yishmael. Abai says you can explain that our Mishnah conforms to Rabbi Yishmael as well. And what we have to now do is somehow reconcile the Mishnah with what we have learned about Rabbi Yishmael in the above Tanaic source. And the Gemara explains, but without the Ran commentary, I think that the Gemara will be very hard to understand. So we'll read a few lines of Gemara and then rely on the Ran to explain the entire matter. So Abaye says our Mishnah can be reconciled with Rabbi Shmuel as well. Masnisin Talya Nafsha B'yoymi. The Mishnah mentioned her accepting Nazirus based on the passage of time. She said, I'll be a Nazira 30 days from now. We saw in the Reisha of the Mishnah, we saw an Almona saying, I'll be a Nazira 30 days from now. We saw case number two, an Eish Hashish, a married woman saying, I'm going to be a Nazira 30 days from now. When she speaks, she is an Eish Hashish, she's a married woman. 30 days from now, is she necessarily going to be divorced or be widowed? We don't know. In fact, 30 days from now, she might still be married. It's true the Mishnah gave an example of her becoming unmarried as a result of widowhood or divorce. But it wasn't let's say it wasn't inevitable at the time of the vow that that was what was going to happen. So in the Mishnah, focusing, let's just say, on case number two, the top of this omid, a married woman said she'll be a Nazira 30 days from now. It could very well be that 30 days from now she still would have been married. In other words, the time of speech, of initial vowing, is not mutually exclusive to her married status 30 days from now. That is the nature of the Mishnah. And Rabbi Shmuel does not, let's say, take a stand in that kind of situation. Now, in contrast, and we should point out there's a textual rereading, and if you're looking at our Mark and Morris, you can see the little star tells you to keep reading at the next line, the angular bracketed section. So, reading from the beginning of the line again, Masnisin Talyanafsha Biyoimi, Shalmu Yoimi, Velonis Garsha. The 30 days mentioned in the Mishnah could conclude, and she isn't necessarily divorced. Shalmu Yoimi Velomis Misnasbo. The 30 days regarding the Resha of the Mishnah, the first case, the 30 days could have passed, and she didn't necessarily get married. Now, that is a description of the Mishnah. We could go back two lines. The end of the line, Braisa, Talya Nafsha B'Nisuin. If you look carefully at the text of the vow in the Braisa, first case you have a woman who is an Almona who says that at the time she speaks, she's independent. And she says she accepts the Nazira's vow when she gets married. So here you have a situation that the time of speech and the time that the vow sets in represent mutually exclusive statuses regarding the woman. In that first case, you have a woman at the time of vowing independent. The time the vow is to set in only when she gets married. And likewise, in the continuation of the Braisa, where you have a married woman, in case number two, a married woman saying that she'll accept Naziris when? Only upon her divorce. Again, mutually exclusive. So in a case like that, Rabbi Shmuel says what he does, namely that the ability of Hafora is dependent on the time the vow sets in. Now, the Ran. The Ran that we're looking at is less than halfway down the page in the narrow lines. Afilu Temo Rabbi Shmuel. The Chiyozer Rabbi Shmuel Boser Chalois HaNeder. When is it that Rabbi Shmuel emphasizes the time that the Neder sets in as determining the possibility of Hafora? When is Chalois HaNeder important? Hani Mili Kitalia Nafshe B'Nisuna B'Gerishin. That's where she makes the vow dependent on either her married status or her divorce status. Hilkoch kevon she'i efsher la'mira sanedir b'chlos sanedir shu b'shus echad. Since in that case, as we said, they're mutually exclusive. The time of her speech and the time of the neder setting in cannot be one in the same. Svira leil Rabbi Shmuel does linen baser chalos haneder. It's under those circumstances that Rabbi Shmuel says, I've got to choose one or the other. So I choose to establish hafora possibilities based on her status at the time that the neder is said to set in. Avol masnisin de lotalia nafshe elo biyomei, the Mishnah where her vow was dependent only on the passage of days. Ve'efshir d'shal miyomei v'lo mitzvo. Shalmu Yom Velo Migrusha, could be that an almona makes the vow and the 30 days pass and she still doesn't get married, or a married woman makes the vow and the 30 days pass and she doesn't get divorced. The result in that case, the case of the Mishnah, the initial vowing and her status at the time that the vow sets in could be one and the same. Afinu kishenishtane harushus, even when in fact her status changes, shenisei sonis gasha moide Rabbi Shmuel the baser amira aslina velo baser chalois. Even Rabbi Shmuel will concede that we emphasize in that kind of situation the time of initial vowing. Since, under circumstances like that, the potential for the initial vowing and the time of neder, a vow, setting in to be in the same, the woman having the original same status, we determine the annulment possibilities by what her status was at the time of initial vowing. Hence, if at the time of initial vowing she was married, even though the vow was designed to set in 30 days from now, and even though she in fact gets divorced before the arrival of the 30 days, since at the time of the vowing she was married, the husband is able to, the annulment that he makes is effective. Since at the end of 30 days, it was not an inevitability that she would have been unmarried. So, as we see in our Gemara, Abaye is able to establish the Mishnah in accordance with not only Rabbi Kiva, but in accordance with Rabbi Shmuel as well. The Gemara now focuses on the phrase Zeh HaKlal. However, in addition to the Zeh HaKlal expression that we saw in our Mishnah, the Zeh HaKlal expression appeared in the 10th perek of this Masechta with a minor difference, but the minor difference is really a major difference. There, the Zeh HaKlal appeared as we wrote, as you can see, we've written between the lines, Zeh HaKlal kol sheloi yotzisot l'rishus atzma. There, the Mishnah was presenting a general rule concerning women that did not leave the domain of father or husband. Shelo yotzer shus atzma. Under circumstances like that, the father and husband have the ability to annul her vows. In our Mishnah, we saw the Zeh HaKlal expression regarding a woman that did leave the domain of others to become independent, and vows made under those circumstances are not subject to annulment. So now the Gemara, and as we mentioned earlier, that when you see the expression Zaklal, almost always it comes to include something beyond that which was stated in the text. So here the Gemara makes reference to Zeh HaKlal Dikotoni Gavinah Murasa, the Zeh HaKlal expression which read Zeh HaKlal Kol Shelo Yotzer L'Rishus Atzma in the Perek named Naam Rasa, the 10th Perek, Lasuye, it comes to include Holach Ho'av Im Shluchei Abal, a girl was getting married, and the father of the girl accompanied the emissaries of the husband who were taking her to the Oros to consummate the marriage. But note, the father went along with the husband's emissaries. Or the father's emissaries accompanied the husband's emissaries. Binara hamurasa, in the case of a nara is a girl between 12 and 12 and a half that had entered the first stage of marriage, and now, as we said, we're going toward the consummation of the marriage. But under these circumstances, where the father himself or the father's emissaries are still in the picture, if she vows at that point, the vows she makes can be annulled by the joint efforts of her father and her husband. Simply put, in these circumstances that we've noted as Aleph and Beis, the girl is still in the domain of her father. together with the Oros. She's not independent. Zeha klal dekatoni gabi veilu nedorim. And here, notice we have an arrow. You can align this with the arrow above. The zeha klal expression here, which read zeha klal kol shi yotzesor shus atzma. What case is being included as an example of a vow that she would make that is not subject to annulment on the part of a father or husband? La suye. This comes to include the following case. Mosar ho'av l'shluchei habal. O shemosru shluchei ho'av l'shluchei habal. In this case, you'll notice she leaves the father's domain. The father himself gave her over to the husband's emissaries. Now, if she vows at this point, the father does not annul. The husband as well cannot annul. Why not? She'ein habal mefer b'koydmin. A husband has no rights of annulment over vows made before she comes into his domain. It's true that while she's an arusa in her father's domain, the husband works in partnership with the father. But in this case, she's left the father's domain. So we don't have this partnership element, and at the same time, she hasn't entered her husband's domain either in terms of consummation of the marriage. So she's considered independent at this juncture. And in line with what our Mishnah was teaching of women that become independent, even for a short amount of time, those vows are not subject to annulment. So we have the last two cases were Moser Av L'Shulchei Abal, the father himself gave her over to the husband's emissaries, or Shemoser Shulchei Av L'Shulchei Abal, or she had been in the presence of her father's emissaries, but they gave her over to the husband's emissaries that receive her to bring her to the husband for consummation of marriage. Those vows are not subject to annulment, certainly not by the father, and vows that she makes at that point in time as well are not subject to the husband's annulment because of the rule Shein Abal Mefer B'Kaidman. A husband cannot annul vows that were made before she enters his domain. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you need to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.